Hi and welcome to another edition of Voices. I'm Joachim Menezes, web editor of IT World Canada, and today we have a very special guest, Andy Canham, president of Sun Canada. Andy, who was appointed to head Sun Canada's operations last November, brings more than 20 years of experience in the global computer industry to his job. Currently, Andy directs all sales and managerial functions within Sun's Canadian operations, as well as growth strategies for the company's hardware, software, and services portfolio. Welcome to the program, Andy.
Hi, Joe. Nice to meet you.
So, Andy, can you tell me what aspect of your job you like best and what you see as your greatest challenge?
Love to. I think one of the things that I like best is working with the team in Canada to be able to help customers try to address some of the new challenges in the world of IT is probably one of the most exciting parts of this. I think our greatest challenge right now is re-engaging with our customers about our ability to be relevant, to help them solve problems, making sure that we can help customers understand what the new capabilities of Sun really are. And they do range from a broad new capability on the server line, a new value proposition in the world of information lifecycle management, as well as many of the new capabilities that we have throughout, particularly our software portfolio.
So coming to the first part of what you mentioned, your initiatives in the server market. Now, in the overall server market in Canada, I believe that Sun Canada has around a 20% market share by revenue.
Okay.
Those are the numbers that IDC put out. Now, do you see this percentage going up in 2006 relative to competitors such as, say, HP and IBM?
Yes, we do, and I'll tell you why. I think we've, as you're probably aware, we've had a major refresh to the Unix-based and Spark-based technologies that we offer to customers. And we think in the space of Unix particularly, that's going to continue to position strength and some new opportunities for us, especially with the multi-thread capabilities that we now have to really offer very, very high-end performance platforms for customers. In addition to that, our new X64 offerings, we really see huge growth opportunities in that segment of the market, which is a very, very large segment, of course, in the Canadian marketplace.
Would I also be right in assuming that a big part of your sales focus this year would be on the new Sunfire T1000 and T2000 systems that are based on the UltraSpark T1 processor? By the way, are the T1000 systems already shipping in Canada?
Just started shipping, yes.
I see.
And so it's a little early to know exactly how we're going to fare in this. We do have a backlog of some orders around the world, which is causing us a little bit of a supply constraint in Canada, but nothing too, I hope it's not going to impact us too much as we look at Q3. There's no question that a lot of the value proposition that we can now offer to customers is around this new technology. For some of the new, very compute-intensive platform opportunities that customers are looking at, we think this is a very good fit for our new technology that we can now proceed with.
And that's where I'm a bit confused, because prior to the launch, when the processor was codenamed Niagara,
yes,
the impression was that the processor would mainly enable the lower-end web-oriented tasks, such as delivering web pages. But at the actual launch, a lot was mentioned about the world records that were snagged by the T1000 and 2000 systems when they were in test mode for things like Java performance and things like running Lotus R6, SAP software, and more kind of intensive tasks.
Yeah.
So do you expect a big take-up for the T1-based servers in these areas?
Well, it's interesting, because I read some of that information from the launch, too, and I think we don't have the technology pre-segmented to certain markets and not other markets. We're discovering, as we test some of this technology in many environments, where it can really perform well. You know, in terms of serving up web pages, it may be an excellent engine for doing that. At the same time, though, for applications that are able to take advantage of threading, I think we're still discovering it, which is exciting. It's a very new technology approach. It's not just another iteration of the Spark technology over the last few years.
Right.
And I think as a result, we're still learning ourselves.
Now, coming to this whole thrust in this whole shift towards hyper-threading and multi-core architectures, some vendors have expressed misgivings that traditional models of software licenses might restrict sales of multi-core offerings. For example, an Intel manager talked about that just a couple of days ago, because Intel's apparently planning for future multi-core versions of Pentium, Xeons, and Itaniums, which they say would have up to 32 cores each. But the problem, as they express it, is that as more logic cores are squeezed into each chip, the software licenses will increase in cost accordingly, but maybe out of all proportion to the cost of the hardware. So is this something that Sun is concerned about as well?
I think that it is, certainly, and we are working with, for example, Oracle recently. We have been working with to adjust to the degree that we can and help work with them through doing multi-core software pricing. So I think that the software industry over time will need to respond to customer needs to and customer interest in these technologies to be able to deploy them effectively. So if we can still deliver on the overall platform, price performance advantages, even with that licensing challenge, I think this is going to be attractive for customers to look at.
It's interesting that you mentioned your talks with Oracle, because Oracle was cited both by an Intel spokesperson and an HP spokesperson as probably being the most misaligned in this area. The argument was that the processor is not a fixed entity anymore, and as the world's changing, so companies like Oracle should change with it. But Oracle issued a statement recently that, you know, they don't have a position with respect to, say, dual-core processors, but their stand is a core is equal to a CPU, and all cores are required to be licensed. You all announced a kind of collaboration with Oracle recently, but is this something that you all are kind of really struggling with?
Well, we announced, in fact, a promotional offering with Oracle, and that talks about how Oracle will count each core as 0.25 CPUs that go a long way to addressing this problem in the short term. I do think for Oracle that this is a very different model for customers to be looking at, and Oracle needs to ensure that whatever decisions they make on a broad basis don't disadvantage some customers. As you know, recently, Joachim, that we're moving much more to an open source model in our own software business and driving to really having customers look at support as the key mechanism to really pay for if they're going to use our software. And that will allow us also to have a different paradigm and metric towards how we charge customers for software and software support.
Now, coming to Sun's open source policy, isn't there a risk in the strategy? For example, if Solaris doesn't gain market share or Sun can't find enough customers to pay for the cost of software development, could the move backfire?
Well, that's an interesting thought, and I don't believe that it will. In fact, what we're observing so far is record numbers of downloads of Solaris, and we honestly believe that in a commercial computing environment, the customers that are going to deploy applications on Solaris for business use will be prepared to pay for software support. They really do want to have a supported environment out there, and for those customers, what we're driving to right out of the gate is to ensure that this is a neutral pricing policy at worst, so that it gives them the opportunity to do some download, take a look at some of the functionality of the software, even do some dev and test if they want with some of the software, and when they're ready to look at production implementations, that we can arrange with them for support accordingly.
Some of the new strategies that Sun has been trying in terms of pricing and sales, one of them is the try before you buy program for the Sunfire T2000 servers, and I want to know if that's also available in Canada.
It is available in Canada. So we do have availability of product in Canada now and have since I would say, late December. Mm-hmm. So we're just beginning those trials, and we have a number of them.
This is a kind of spin-off from a question that I asked earlier in terms of the shift towards hyper-threading and multi-core architectures. What I want to know is, what do you see as the impact of this shift on software development? Do you believe it will change the way developers will write software in future?
Well, our hope is that as we work with Solaris 10 and working with the database vendors, that we insulate software developers from having to worry too much about the underlying technology architecture, so that if the operating system and databases can take advantage of multi-threading in a typical transaction anyway, that the developers won't have to worry too much about it in most typical development environments. having said that, you know, what we're doing, and we do make a large investment in the Java community in helping the Java development community understand not just new tools available in that market for development, but how to take advantage of some new technologies. But certainly, I think our theme is that to as large a degree as we can, we want to insulate the development community from having to worry about the underlying technology.
I'd like your take on the significance of the recent announcement of the expanded partnership between Sun and Oracle, and specifically on the Java development initiatives. Both Scott McNeely as well as Larry Ellison had said that both firms would aggressively package and market each other's non-competing software and would continue to work together on Java development initiatives, at least for the next 10 years. Can you comment on the significance of this announcement?
Absolutely. I think that, first of all, you know, there are a number of elements to that in Oracle's commitment with us moving forward. There's the Java commitment itself. We have many complementary technologies that we, and which is really where we want to focus to work with each other, and also on the underlying development platform commitment that Oracle has made in the Solaris space. I think this is a major shift for Oracle to move from what was previously a Linux position that they had taken. And you can imagine that Oracle would, as an organization as large as they are, would take a hard look at before making a major shift such as this in shifting to the Solaris platform. And I believe that they, like many other customers that we've had switch from Linux to Solaris, are beginning to see the value of in Solaris 10 of all of the capabilities and the engineering and the release management approach that we have.
And now a more personal question, Andy. What do you do outside of your job? What are some of your hobbies, some of your preferred activities for relaxation and to help you unwind?
I think my biggest hobby lately is with Air Canada. I'm still living in Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the short term, you know, we have a plan to move in March to Toronto. So that's going to be a big move for our family. We've been in Western Canada for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And but I'm certainly looking forward to continuing to playing a little bit of hockey, which I like to do from time to time, hanging out with my kids on weekends, which I really look forward to, especially now that I've been commuting for a long time on the road, and occasionally getting out for the odd golf game. I'm a bit of a runner, too. Every a couple of times a week, I like to try to get out to do a little bit of running, too. So those tend to occupy my time.
Well, thanks so much for your time, Andy. It was a pleasure having you as a guest on this Voices program.
It was nice to talk to you, Joachim. I'd read a couple of the articles the team had sent me in advance of our discussion today, so it was a great opportunity to speak to you live. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thanks again.